Welcome, everyone. This is a Council of Institutional Investors educational podcast. I'm Jeff Mahoney, General Counsel of CII. I'm here today with Professor B. Espen Ekbo, the Tuck Centennial Chair, Professor of Finance at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College. Professor Ekbo is the co-author of a recent research paper published in Management Science entitled Valuation Effects of Norway's Board Gender Quota Law Revisited. Thank you, Professor, for speaking with us today.
Thank you for inviting me. It's such an important topic. Allow me to also mention the names of my co-authors, since we're talking about a research paper. These are Professors Karin Torbern at the Norwegian School of Economics and Knut Nygaard at the Oslo Metropolitan University in Oslo.
So, Professor, your paper evaluates the effects of a 2005 Norwegian government mandate that public companies have gender-balanced boards. So let's begin by providing our listeners some background and an overview of Norway's board gender quota law.
Sure. You mentioned 2005. Let's go back to the early 2000s, a little earlier, to see the development of this quota law. So in the beginning of 2000, the Norwegian government implemented a mandated board gender balancing for its own state-owned enterprises first. And then in 2003, it extended this requirement to all public limited liability companies. It demanded 40% from each gender sitting on the board. But it was a voluntary thing, and it would have a sunset provision after 2 years in 2005 if these companies voluntarily came up with 40% balanced at the time. Then in December 2005, this is the 2005 you mentioned, the government was not very happy with the developments because firms had only gotten to 20% female directors at the time. So the quota law was then passed as a mandatory law with actually a penalty of forced liquidation for noncompliance. At the time, you had newspaper headings calling this decision Norway or the highway. A very tough one because it hadn't happened in any other countries before, actually. Norway was the first. So by 2 years later, early 2008, there was actually full compliance, not surprisingly. And there are a few facts that are interesting behind this compliance activity. First of all, the average board size has been 5 shareholder elected members over the last 25 years. That number 5 did not change as a result of the quota law. And why is that important? Well, in a sense, if you are happy to keep your male board members, 5 of them, if you're an all-male board, you could, under the law, expand your number of board seats to 8 by hiring 3 new female directors and keep your old buddies, so to speak, on the board. That did not happen. What firms decided to do en masse is to let go of the male, on average, 1.5 male board member and hire in female directors. So that was one interesting fact because it meant that they were kind of happy to switch from male to female at the time. Now, the incoming females, it turns out, and there's lots of research on this, it shows that the females had similar educational backgrounds, similar professional backgrounds as the males that were exiting the boards. And also, there were enough females to be hired as directors to avoid having few women sitting on multiple boards. In fact, 80% of all these board seats, the director has 1 seat, not more than 1. So there was a deep supply, I think, of these qualified female women to sit on the boards. Another thing that we have shown, there were no listing changes or incorporation changes prompted by this quota law. So in a sense, if firms had meant it was too costly for them to comply, they could have switched the incorporation to private limited liability companies from public. And as I said, they did not. So as of today, nine EU, European Union countries have followed suit. Now, these countries are implementing very different, a variety of different requirements. Some are lower percentage females, and all of them actually have smaller penalties for non-compliance. So the Norwegian quota law is still kind of unique out there, and it was the first one. So studying this, the consequences of this particular quota law is kind of interesting to everybody in the current debate.
Right. So, Professor, the Wall Street Journal wrote that Norway's quota law damaged shareholder value in the companies affected. So what were your findings with respect to that claim?
Yeah, so back in 2012, actually, the Wall Street Journal, the Financial Times, and The Economist all quoted the prominent study that came out in 2012. This study claimed to document that the quota law caused a whopping 20% drop in the market value of firms listed on the Oslo Stock Exchange, if they had all male boards at the time. Now, we were somewhat suspicious of this large value decline estimate. How come value can decline by 20% when you place 1.5 directors on the 5-member board on average? So it prompted us to take a second look. This resulted in today's management science publication that you mentioned, and which you are free to make available on your CII website if you wish. Indeed, after doing all this research and replicating the old studies from 2012, we found fundamental econometric errors justified scientifically in the 2012 study. So we corrected for those errors, and when we do so, there simply is no evidence that the quota law affected the values, the market values of OSE listed companies. So our main conclusion from this paper, which is now published, is instead that the supply of qualified female directors was actually sufficiently high to avoid shareholder-borne cost of the quota. This conclusion, of course, is also consistent with the subsequent evidence that we've shown on female director qualifications and the fact that firms chose not to change board size or migrate to unregulated private limited liability corporate form. So in that sense, we have essentially reversed the 2012 study. And it's important that this message comes out in the current debate.
Professor, the United States Securities and Exchange Commission recently approved a standard that requires companies listed on NASDAQ to disclose diversity information about their boards using a standardized template, and subject to certain exceptions, requires them to have at least 2 diverse directors or explain why they've not met that standard. Some cited the experience in Norway as a basis for opposing the NASDAQ standard. So putting yourself in the shoes of an institutional investor, would you have supported or opposed the NASDAQ standard?
So the citation that you are mentioning, I actually went back and read it. And what it does is citing the old 2012 study again. And it ignores our correction of that study. It does cite us too, but it doesn't go into what we're doing, how we correct the old 2012 study. As to the NASDAQ rule itself, as we all know, directors have a fiduciary responsibility to shareholders. I'm therefore not in general in favor of limiting shareholders' choice of directors. However, it is, as is also well known, actually, board elections in many publicly listed firms in the US are quite flawed, as a director nomination process severely limits open competition for seats. So with this in mind, I'm hoping that the NASDAQ comply or explain order will leave sufficient freedom and flexibility for firms to elect the best set of directors that they can find. However, only experience will tell if that's gonna happen.
So, Professor, one of the SEC commissioners who opposed the NASDAQ standard argued that the standard would harm the market in several ways. including that it permits the NASDAQ to, quote, micromanage the delicate process of composing a board, a process that does not lend itself well to standardization, unquote. What's your reaction to that argument?
Okay, so we can all agree that when it comes to board composition, one size does not fit all. It's pretty obvious. Now, going back to research in this area, it is very hard to find clear recommendations in terms of composition of the board and how that affects the value of the firms. Now, again, I take this sort of little different view that past research has shown that board election process in the U.S. is actually more micromanaged by the company C-suite, possibly at the expense of shareholders. There is research showing how much of a difficulty it is to compete for board seats. So it's possible, although we don't know yet, but it's possible that perhaps an unintended effect of the NASDAQ interference here, maybe to tilt the balance of power away from the executives towards shareholders. Now, if that's the case, there could be a positive outcome from the point of view of large institutional investors to this NASDAQ rule. But I emphasize, research on this topic is not terribly conclusive, and so it's open for debate. But in my own personal view, I think that the conflict in terms of between shareholders and executives may be more important than that the executives and shareholders are imposed in terms of the composition of the board. But again, we'll have to see what happens in practice here.
On behalf of the Council of Institutional Investors, I want to thank our special guest, Professor B. Espen Ekbo, the Tech Centennial Chair, Professor of Finance at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College. If you have any questions or comments regarding this podcast, please feel free to contact me at Jeff, J-E-F-F, at CII.org. Until next time, I'm Jeff Mahoney. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Voice of Corporate Governance, brought to you by the Council of Institutional Investors. The Voice of Corporate Governance is a free, non-sponsored podcast that highlights critical developments in corporate governance and other important issues affecting institutional investors. The views expressed by those interviewed on the podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of CII or its members. For more information on CII and its policies on corporate governance, please visit our website at www.cii.org.